A Mother in Israel, Chapter 52. Ehud, who had killed Eglon, the king of the Moabites, and by whom the Lord had delivered Israel, had died. It wasn't long after his death before the children of Israel again forsook the Lord. They again began to copy and make the idols of the heathen nations which lived around them. Images were erected all around the land, and the Israelites bowed before them. They honored these homemade idols as their gods. They brought their sacrifices to them, and the Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they forgot. They no longer needed the Lord, for they had another God. Oh, that was so ungodly, so ungrateful. How could it be possible for them to forget the Lord? Still, that dwells in each of our hearts. Don't we too forget the Lord? And the children of Israel forgot him too. They did not bend their knees before the Lord at night, but they worship the dead stone or wood images. Many no longer went to Shiloh, where the tabernacle stood, and where the priests of the Lord were. Oh no, they didn't care about doing that. It was far too troublesome, and they would sooner remain in their own village. And they had made a stone or wood image in nearly every village, and there they would celebrate their feasts. When the wheat grew abundantly, they didn't thank the Lord for it, but they thanked their idol. Could that stone image make it rain, or could it make the sun shine? Indeed not. Still, the men and women gave all the honor to these dead stone images. By doing that, they ridiculed the Lord. They acted as though there were no God. But even in those days there were children of God living in Israel who could not forsake the Lord because he had given them a heart that loved him. They did not join with the ungodly people in their idol feasts, but they still went to Shiloh and thanked the Lord when the harvest was a success. As a result, they were laughed to scorn and mocked by the others. The Lord heard and saw everything, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against that evil, ungrateful people. He saw that the Israelites would no longer serve him, so he sent his judgments upon them. It couldn't be otherwise. By so doing, the Israelites actually asked for these punishments. The Lord sent his judgments. And they were terrible. Listen, and you will hear about them. There was no water supply in the land of Canaan such as we have. Each village in each city had one or several wells. The women and girls drew water from them for their needs. You have heard many times about these wells, isn't that so? Rebekah came to a well. Jacob sat by a well. And when he fled to his uncle Laban, and Moses also, and when he fled out of Egypt to Midian. Many more incidents could be related. Now such wells were found all over the land of Canaan. The women and girls would generally go for water in the morning and evening. They carried a pitcher upon their shoulder or head, filled it at the well with water, and then return to their homes. In our thoughts, we will visit one of these wells in Canaan. It is quiet and peaceful there. A few women and girls are coming toward the well, talking to each other as they are walking. As they arrive at the well and expect to draw water, they suddenly are stopped by a few soldiers. They harm these girls by hitting and robbing them. They steal their ornaments, and these girls frighten exceedingly. That is very cruel, isn't it? Who are these men, these plunderers? Why do they do that? These soldiers were no Israelites. These robbers were foreigners. They were Canaanites. You remember that the Israelites, after the death of Joshua, did not kill all the remaining Canaanites, even though the Lord had told them to do it. They were disobedient to the command of God. Some of these Canaanites still lived in the northern part of the land. They were formerly defeated by Joshua, and their city had been burned. But Joshua, already being dead a long time, these Canaanites had again rebuilt their city. They again became strong and powerful. They had an enormous army, and now these Canaanites were oppressing the children of Israel. They invaded the land, and the Israelites could not resist them, because the Lord did not help them at this time. Why didn't the Lord help them? Because they had forsaken him and served other gods who were no gods. The Canaanites exercised authority over the Israelites. They would travel over the highways in large troops and steal everything they saw. They took cows and sheep out of the pastures, the wheat they cut down, and the ripe grapes they stole from the vineyards. This was a sad condition. Not only did the Canaanites rob everything, but they harmed the Israelites too. When the women and girls went to draw water from the well, the enemy would fall upon them, maltreat them, plunder them of everything they had, and probably even killed some of them. It became very dangerous at the wells of water. They didn't dare to come there anymore. Traveling Israelites often were attacked on the way. They had to surrender everything. If they refused, they were mistreated and sometimes slain. We read in the Bible that the highways were unoccupied. This means that no one dared to go on a journey, for it was no longer safe. Whenever anyone was compelled to go on a trip, he didn't dare travel the regular roads. He had to go a roundabout way. Sometimes he would walk straight across the fields. If he heard anything, he would hide behind the bushes so that the Canaanites would not see him. The farmers on their farms and the inhabitants of the small villages were no longer safe. The Canaanites also came there and beat and ill-treated these people. Was it any wonder the Israelites fled to the cities? We read that the inhabitants of the villages ceased in the land of the children of Israel. Only in the cities was it still rather safe, although sometimes the Canaanites would come to the gates of a city and shoot at and kill the watchmen on the wall. Why didn't the Israelites defend themselves when this happened? The Israelites were afraid, because the Canaanites were strong and mighty. Jabin, their king, had built iron wagons or chariots. He didn't have one or two, but 900. A very courageous captain was the leader of the Canaanites' army. His name was Sisera. The Israelites could accomplish nothing against him. The fields were empty and deserted, because the farmers had fled to the city. Oh, how much misery prevailed in Israel in those days. So much trouble, so much sorrow. Why did all this happen to them? Alas, that was their punishment because they had forsaken the Lord and were worshiping idols. Years went by, and it remained as it was. The Canaanites took away from the Israelites all their weapons, their swords, knives, and spears. Then the Israelites could not fight. They were powerless. Thus the Canaanites oppressed the children of Israel for 20 years. A long time, wasn't it? Finally, when the children of Israel were desperate and they could find help nowhere, they began to repent of their idolatry. They began to pray to God, and when they again felt their need of the Lord, it again was proven that their idols could not help them. Now they prayed to the Lord for deliverance. The Lord heard these prayers, and he delivered Israel from the Canaanites, their cruel enemy, who had oppressed them for 20 long, long years. How? In the center of the nation, not far from the village of Shiloh, and where the tabernacle stood, lived a woman by the name of Deborah. She did not join in the idol worship of the children of Israel. No, she could not, because she was a God-fearing woman. Oh, how grieved she was when her nation forsook the Lord so shamefully. She did not forget the Lord. She bent her knees daily, praying to God. She also warned her nation against the ways of sin. At first, the Israelites would not listen to her. But when the Canaanites entered into the land and had oppressed them for many years, they began to listen. They thought, "Deborah really is right. It is our own fault that we have come to such misery. It is because we have forsaken God." One day, Deborah sent a message to Kedesh, a city in the tribe of Naphtali. This city was one of the cities of refuge. You still remember what these were, don't you? Near the city of Kedesh and was the capital of the Canaanites, in which Jabin their king lived. Deborah's message is to a young Israelite, Barak by name, who lived in this city of Kedesh. Deborah wishes Barak to come to her, and he goes. When he meets Deborah, she says, "The Lord has made known to me that you must assemble the Israelites and fight against the Canaanites. You need not fear, for the Lord will give you a complete victory." Barak frightens. He feels he cannot do it. This is not surprising, for the army of Sisera, the general of the Canaanites, is so strong. Still, he does not dare refuse. But, he says, "I will do it upon one condition. You must go along. Otherwise, I will not go." Deborah answers, "Good, I will go along. But you will not receive the honor of the victory, because you demand that I, as a weak woman, go along. A woman will also receive the greatest honor. Sisera, the general of the Canaanites, shall not be captured and slain by you, Barak, but a woman shall kill him." Deborah prepares for the journey and leaves with Barak. The journey is dangerous, for the Canaanites lurk everywhere. How does she dare go on such a mission? She is a brave, courageous woman. A mother will jump into the water to rescue her child, isn't that right? Deborah is as a mother to the Israelites. She risks everything, even her life, for her nation. For many years she advised the Israelites. She was a prophetess, and God protected her along the unsafe road. Barak sent messengers to all places, calling Israel to battle, and they come by hundreds and thousands. Before long, Barak had an army of 10,000 soldiers. He marched with this army to a high mountain, that is, Mount Tabor. The little brook Kishon flowed in the valley beneath the mountain. The Canaanites, who are all over the land, see what is taking place, and they send a message to their captain Sisera. When he hears this, he also assembles his entire army. He marches to the brook Kishon, taking with him every one of his 900 iron chariots. Soon the armies will be facing each other, and the Canaanites are much stronger than the Israelites. O Barak, what are you going to do? Man, you should remain at home, for you will certainly be the loser. No, Barak does not remain home, neither is he afraid. He believes God will give him the victory. He believes God will help him. Barak is a champion of faith. Neither does Sisera doubt his ability to drive the little army of Israelites to flight. In his thoughts, he sees himself returning as the victor, and then he will plunder and steal whatever he pleases. He will become a rich man. Soon the battle begins. Suddenly, the sky becomes overcast with thick, dark clouds. It begins to storm and thunder, and the rain comes down in torrents. All this water streams down the mountainside into the valley, causing the little brook of Kishon to become a seething, foaming river full of water from the heavy downpour. The iron chariots of the Canaanites sink into the mud, and they cannot ride further. They cannot do anything with them. Hundreds of Sisera's soldiers are drowned, and others are slain by the Israelites. The enormous army of the Canaanites falls into confusion, and the mighty army soon takes to flight. All this happens because the Lord, the God of Israel, fights against them. They hadn't expected that. Sisera himself must flee. He cannot ride, so he must run. He races over the fields as he never ran before. He runs for his life. A few tents stand in the distance. Sisera thinks, "Do you know what? I will flee to those tents and hide there. Then the Israelites cannot find me." As he comes near, a woman comes walking from one of these tents. Her name is Jael. She is still a descendant of Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses. Jael motions to Sisera and cries out, "Turn in, my lord, turn in to me, fear not." It is as though she says, "You may come here, come in this tent, you need not be afraid of me." Sisera hurries into her tent. He is panting from running so fast, and the sweat is upon his forehead. "Do you have a little water for me? I am terribly thirsty," he asks her. Jael is very friendly towards him. She doesn't give him any water, but she gives him a bottle of milk. It is delicious and refreshing, and he drinks it greedily. She brings him butter upon a dish. Sisera lies upon the ground. He cannot stand any longer. He hopes to sleep a while, and after he is rested, to flee further. Go stand in the door of the tent, he says to Jael. If anyone comes by and asks you if someone has fled inside, you must answer, no, no one is here. Being so very tired, Sisera soon falls into a sound sleep. Jael notices this, and then, look. Jael quickly takes an iron pin in one hand and a hammer in the other. She quietly tiptoes to the sleeping Sisera, cautiously bends over him, and carefully puts the pin to his head. Sisera is so fast asleep that he feels nothing. Jael raises the hammer and hits the sharp iron pin with a hard blow. She nails the head of Sisera to the ground. He makes one wild movement with his hands, gives a deep sigh, and Sisera is dead. This mighty general, of whom everyone had been afraid, was slain by a woman. A little later, Barak comes running rapidly. He wants to overtake Sisera and make him his prisoner. It would be a great honor for him if he could succeed. Jael sees him coming and walks to meet him. She says, come with me. I know where Sisera is. Come along with me. Barak follows her, enters the tent, and there lies Sisera, dead. Barak will not kill Sisera. A woman, Jael, has killed him. Everything happened exactly as Deborah had said. Probably Barak was disappointed for a moment, but the purpose was attained. The enemy was defeated. After so many years of oppression and violence, Israel again was free. Oh, how happy they were. Now the farmers again may plow and sow. The girls and women may draw water, and the Israelites may travel. No one will harm them anymore. Rest and peace once more were restored in the land of Canaan. The Lord had delivered them. The Lord had saved them. Deborah, who was a mother to the Israelites, also returned to her own home. The journey was not dangerous now, because the Canaanites were gone. Deborah thanked the Lord for the great deliverance.